And here's your host, Dr. Tony Bean.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Hour number two is here. We're glad you're listening. We thank you for joining us. If you're joining us for the first time, come on in. And we got a great show for you. This is Tony Bean, Vice President for Student Life and Christian Worldview at North Greenville University, where Christ makes the difference and where we're turning out transformational leaders for the church and society. My co-host is Hannah Miller.
Outspokenly opinionated and unashamedly conservative, this is Hannah Miller, informed and unafraid.
Okay, I just approved an expense report. How about that?
Oh, you're getting some work done over there.
Well, actually, it's very frustrating when you have to change. They make you change your password about every 4 months. And I couldn't find where I'd written the old password. So you have to have the old password before you can put in a new password. So fortunately, my computer remembered for me. That's what got me out of trouble here.
Oh, by the way, before I forget, you weren't here Friday.
That's correct.
It was Blackout Friday. But I talked about something, and I said I was going to do a blog, and I did. I published a blog. It's on Tony and Hannah. You can go find it. The title, Samantha Bee and Profanity, Have We Sliced Too Far? So if you've been looking for it, that's where it's at. Because I told people I was going to put it up. So.
Yeah.
We talked about that Friday. Yeah, I kind of read it.
From now on, I think we're going to. If you're out with one of your kids sick, or if you have to be somewhere, I'm just going to call it Hannah Flakeout Day.
It's just not as catchy as Friday Flakeout, you know?
Yeah. No, I know. Well, I'll come up with something else. Just give me some time.
It's all right.
Let's do celebrity birthdays. If you're having a birthday today, happy birthday to you. We like to say this to you, but we like to sing it to you. Here we go.
Happy birthday.
Yes, you are a celebrity on your birthday, and you share a celebrity birthday with these people. Dennis Weaver was born in 1924. He was Chester on Gunsmoke. He was McCloud on, ABC, I think, did the mystery movie, and McCloud, part of that. Bruce Dern is 82 today. If you've ever seen a movie, you've seen Bruce Dern. He's been in a ton of them. He's been nominated for Academy Awards for Supporting Actor. I don't think he's ever won one. But he turns 82 today. Freddie Fender was born today in 1937. Michelle Phillips of the Mamas and the Papas is 74 today. Noah Wiley is 47. He was on ER, and he's been on a bunch of TBS movies. Russell Brand is 43, the comedian. And Angelina Jolie turns 43 today.
I know that one.
Yeah, there you go. She's 43 today. Thank goodness. We got one in there that Hannah recognized. It was close. We had to get all the way down to the end, ladies and gentlemen.
I was like, in my mind, but we got one.
Okay. All right. What was I going to talk about here? Have you got something you want to talk about that's on burning in your heart here?
No. Well, we talked about the jobs report, and we talked about North Korea and the tariffs, and that was really kind of the big thing.
We've done all those things. Let me get back to California here for just a second.
Oh, yeah.
Because we were talking about California and conservatism. Victor Davis Hanson has got a good piece today at the National Review, if you want to check that out, talking about the fact that conservatism in California is cyclical. And that they're one of the reasons that Franklin Graham is out there pounding away right now is because there seems to be an open door for a resurgence of conservatism. One of the things that could happen in California right now, progressives are kind of wigging out about it. We've talked about it a little bit, is because of the way California election law works, the top two candidates in a primary are on the ballot. Okay. Now, that doesn't mean that, like, the top two vote getters out of a primary, if both are Republicans, then you'll only have Republicans on the ballot in the fall. Now, you can count on the fact that in California, they'll probably start some kind of write-in campaign to try to get a progressive back up there. But it's possible in the current environment in California, by the ways the districts are drawn, by where these races are taking place, that you could end up with two Republican House members on the ballot and not a Democrat. You could end up with two Republican candidates for governor and not a Democrat because of the way that it looks.
Right.
And I think that's part of the reason that Franklin Graham is out there with his bus tour, because he knows that this is happening. You can sense the pushback on the sanctuary cities that California is beginning. I mean, the state is a disaster, and people are desperate, but they just haven't believed that there's anything they can do about it, because there's not enough Republicans in the California legislature to even filibuster. I mean, whatever progressives want to do, they could do in California. Mm-hmm. And so if you want to see what the rest of the country would look like if we were to turn the country over to progressives, just look at California. Look at the problems that we would have. You know, you've got on the coast, you've got this little pocket of well-to-do, and most of the people that live in the coastal areas, they're anti-immigration. And what's interesting is they live in gated communities.
Right.
I find that a little bit hypocritical. I mean, you don't want to put up a wall, but you want to live behind one because the people that you're letting in the country, to come into the state of California with open immigration laws, obviously it's causing a problem. It's not everybody. A lot of people that come into California from Mexico, people that are coming, people migrating to California, are good people. They're not there to cause trouble, to hurt somebody. But there are a lot of bad elements coming out of Mexico into California, and it's causing a lot of problems. The interior of the state and the northern part of California is really, those folks struggle economically. And so that's where Franklin Graham's bus tour is going, and that's where a lot of the conservative resurgence, so to speak, is beginning to take hold. Now, whether it'll be enough to make a difference in this election or not, we'll have to see. But if California could elect a truly Republican governor, and they could begin to see, you know, some changes in the state house. It happened once. It happened, you know, Reagan was governor. He was a two-term governor of California back in the 60s. Now, think about what was going on in the 60s. I mean, that was the free speech movement at Berkeley. There was a lot of turmoil in the country. And California at that time was somewhat of a conservative state. I mean, a lot more than it is today. So it's not impossible that California could turn. And if we could turn California, that would have a huge impact on a national election. Trump lost in California by 30 points. I mean, he was, you know, Hillary won that state easily. And I don't think Trump even, did he campaign in California?
Not that I can
recall.
Remember.
I don't think he went out there. I just don't, because there was no reason.
I don't think that's been that whole attitude, though, of everybody's just kind of, we've thrown our hands up, because it's just been, you know, like you just said, there's been no reason. But I think people are starting to feel a little bit of hope over there, because there's just been so much pushback against, you know, they've had issues. There's the homosexual, what was it you were talking about earlier? What's the term for it?
Reclamation therapy.
Yes, therapy issue that a lot of people are pushing back against. And there's the sanctuary cities primarily that in the renting and there, you know, people can't afford to put a roof over their head. They have had countless issues in the education system in the last few months, or the last year, really. And so there's been story after story coming out of California and their education system. And so I think there's just been some things that's piled on top of each other that have been going on long enough.
And once you have somebody stand up, once you get a group of people like these cities that are pushing back against sanctuary city policy, once people begin to stand up, then people who have felt that way for a long time are looking around going,
Yeah, me too.
This is happening. Maybe there is something we can do. Mm-hmm. And they begin to come to the table.
Begin to rally together.
And as that happens, you know, I bet you if this continues, if that trend continues in California, you're going to see President Trump go out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could see him going out to California and having a rally.
And maybe that's what Graham is doing. He's setting the groundwork for something like that if the tide begins to turn a little bit.
Could be. All right, let's take a break. We'll be back in 3 minutes. Stay with us. 1-888-660-WLFJ, 888-660-9535. That's how most people remember the number, and you're welcome to call in. When we come back, we're going to do a little update here on where we are with all things Trump. We've got a montage of Trump's lawyers from over the weekend on the talk shows, where all that stands in terms of whether he's going to testify or not in the Russian collusion thing. Stay with us. We'll be back in 3 minutes.
Here are your hosts, Hannah Miller and Dr. Tony Beam.
All right, welcome back to the program. Thanks for listening here in hour number two. This is Tony Beam.
This is Hannah Miller.
Not a whole lot of developments over the weekend, unless you're just up to your neck in the Russia collusion story. You've got the Trump legal team, led by Rudy Giuliani, is pretty much out there saying, "Look, could the president pardon himself?" He's saying, "Well, that could be an interesting constitutional question." Can the president pardon all these people that have been indicted as part of the Mueller probe? And the answer to that is yes. The president could shut down the Mueller probe. But would the president do this? And the answer is probably no, simply because that would lead to his impeachment. And there would be he would lose Republican support in a hurry if he used his presidential powers to do that. You know, the president's been pardoning people left and right. He pardoned Dinesh D'Souza, which, you know, look, I think D'Souza, that his conviction, his all of that was politically motivated, every bit of it, because he basically was prosecuted because he gave too much money to a candidate. I mean, Roseanne Barr has bragged about the fact that she gave too much money to a candidate, and she's not under indictment anywhere. I just think that they selectively targeted. Very few people ever get prosecuted for violating that law. Now, that doesn't make it, I mean, if we're not going to enforce the law, we ought to get rid of it. But we sure shouldn't use it as an opportunity to go after people that we disagree,
that you disagree
with politically. So I think that's great that Trump pardoned Dinesh D'Souza. And what about, but now he's talking about Martha Stewart, that he might pardon her. And he's talking about this guy out of Chicago. What was his name? I can't think of his name. But anyway, he was convicted of doing being involved in a lot of bad political stuff. Blagojevich, that's his name, Rob Blagojevich. He's thinking about commuting, not pardoning. He got, I think, sentenced to 12 years in prison, and he might say, okay, he served about 6-7 years. Mm-hmm. It's time to let him out. He might commute his sentence. So it's interesting what Trump's doing here. But the conversation kind of morphed into, well, what if he were to pardon himself? Or is that even constitutional? And then the other development over the weekend is whether or not, again, we're in this discussion about whether Trump's going to testify and sit down in front of Mueller, answer questions. It appears that the answer is yes, if it's a very tightly controlled set of questions. The answer is no if Mueller wants to expand this and ask Trump questions on a broad front. Mm-hmm. If that's the case, then Giuliani says we're going to fight it.
Yeah, we're not going to get engaged with a witch hunt.
Right. He basically says that we're ready to go to war. We think we can keep the president. We think we can quash a subpoena because one of the things that would cause the Supreme Court to uphold a subpoena to President Trump is if the prosecutor, the special counsel, I should say, is able to demonstrate that there's facts that he can't get anywhere else except from President Trump. And Giuliani's argument is that everything that Mueller wants to know, he should already know, or he could get from another source. And so that means that President Trump doesn't have to testify. That's an interesting constitutional question. You know, the last time that when Bill Clinton tried to squash a subpoena to testify, the Supreme Court said, no, you got to show up and testify. And, of course, his testimony got him disbarred in Arkansas because he was caught lying in his testimony. And that led to him being disbarred. So, you know, this is the problem with President Trump. Everybody's afraid. His legal team is afraid that if he goes up in front of Mueller, it's going to be nothing but a perjury trap and that he doesn't need to do this because the investigation is going in his direction. It's kind of like a defense attorney doesn't want to put their client on the stand if they think they're winning the case.
Right.
Because there's too much that can go wrong if you do that. When a prosecutor has an opportunity to go after your client. So anyway, this is a montage. This is cut number one. This is from the Sunday shows. And you're going to hear kind of a back and forth here. Corey Lewandowski, who was the Trump campaign manager for a while, was on one of the Sunday shows. And then you had Rudy Giuliani on the other. And they were going back and forth about what Trump should or shouldn't do.
I would prefer to put emphasis on the fact he didn't do anything wrong. I mean, he didn't obstruct.
Okay.
And we're willing to sit there and argue that out with the special counsel if he has, you know, an open mind about it.
They're trying to sit down and figure out if the president is going to sit down for an interview, and that interview is going to be based on a narrow scope of questions that the team is trying to negotiate right now. But what Rudy Giuliani has said, as the president's attorney, is if the Mueller investigators decide to subpoena this president, they will take it to court, and I believe the court is going to be on the president's side on this.
The idea is you can't interfere with him either from a point of view of indictment or questioning. You can't interfere with the president's time, his effort, his concentration.
And I have to just be honest, I mean, with leaning toward not. But look, if they can convince us that it would be brief, it'll be to the point, there are 5 or 6 points they have to clarify, and with that, we can get this over, this long nightmare for the American public over.
Yeah, see, look, I think if they could say to Trump, we're going to interview you, and then we're going to wrap it up. If they would give a date, if Mueller would say, after we interview you within X amount of time, the investigation is going to be over, we're going to issue our report. And if they would focus the questions on things rather than going off and asking about Trump's business dealings and all this kind of thing, you know, trying to get far afield from the Russia investigation, I think that Giuliani would agree and Trump would sit down to avoid the subpoena battle. But I just don't think that's going to happen. I think we're going to have a subpoena fight.
Yeah, I think it probably will. With the nature of Donald Trump and the Mueller investigation, I think that's probably what we're looking at, because both of them have seemed to, you know, Mueller, I mean, he's really drugged this out. He really seems to have kind of dug his feet in, and he's determined to find something, it seems like, because of just how long this has gone on. And I don't see that he's going to be willing to drop it now. I mean, he's brought it this far, you know, and so I think that he's not going to be willing to say, look, if you just come in, if you Mueller is doing. But if Mueller is able to say, this is exactly what we're doing, this is exactly what we want, we're going to wrap it all up, I think Trump would be willing to say, all right, I'll validate that and let's just finish all this business. But I think you're right. I don't see that happening from the Mueller investigation. And you know, so I don't think Trump's going to respond that way.
These big letters that came out from Trump's legal team that actually was sent to Mueller back in January, but they were revealed over the weekend. You know, basically laying out the legal strategy of how they would respond if Trump was subpoenaed, and how that they think they can win, and also whether or not that the president can be indicted. I mean, basically, they laid out the fact that you cannot indict a sitting president of the United States for a crime. Now, when he leaves office, you can indict him, but basically you can't bring him under indictment if he's currently the president of the United States. Of course, evidence that would suggest that he should be indicted would be so detrimental to him that probably, you know, impeachment proceedings would be successful. But there's no indication so far that anything like that is going to come out of the Mueller probe.
Right.
What's come out of the Mueller probe is that the Russians tried to interfere in the election. I think that's been clear. And that Paul Manafort and Gates are pretty shady business people who have had illegal contact with companies in Russia. They've done some illegal lobbying for Russian interest, and they're going to be held legally accountable for that. I mean, they're charged. They'll go to court. They'll have a trial, and they'll either be found guilty or innocent. But none of that has anything to do with the election and whether or not because a lot of this stuff that Manafort is charged with happened before he was associated with the Trump campaign. Mm-hmm. All right, Bill's on the phone. Bill, what you got for us?
A very good morning to you, Mrs. Miller. And Mrs. Miller, I apologize for not saying happy birthday last week, and we're most grateful that you take your time away from your children to volunteer to come in, and you bring a lot of research and information to us. So we're grateful for that. And good morning to you, Dr. Bean. Dr. Bean, I will agree with you and others. I don't believe there's going to be a blue wave or a red wave. I believe there's going to be a true wave. And this will be dealing with both conservative Democrats and moderate Republicans and independents. So I don't see a blue wave or a red wave. And here's another thing. Have you noticed that the president, our president, lawyers are not talking about him being innocent? Everything is about how we can say as a defendant what we are going to do. And I do believe, according to you, that it's not about President Trump. I think it's about members of his family. And that's why I think you're going to have, that's why he has great concern. That's why he now admits that he dictated that information to the public about his son. So, no, I don't think we're going to find anything. But I hope he doesn't go too far in trying to defend members of his family or a member of his family that he jeopardized his presidency. And that's what my concern is, because the defendant cannot set the perimeters of what the prosecutor is going to do. So
yeah, the general
counsel.
Just
like to have your opinion on that. And thank you so much for all that you do.
Thanks, Bill. All right. Well, look, first of all, it's not true that Trump's lawyers have stopped saying that he's innocent. I think Rudy Giuliani says there was no collusion with the Trump with Trump or the Trump campaign every time he opens his mouth, basically. So that they're still asserting that there's nothing to this, and that's why they want the investigation wrapped up. Now, as far as whether there's got to be something to protect Trump's children from, I mean, Donald Trump Jr., that, you know, there's got to be. And I don't see anything yet. Now, maybe Mueller's got something. I mean, there pixie dust might have. We're back to the pixie dust comment again. I mean, there could be. We don't know what we don't know about what Mueller knows. So Mueller knows. I mean, that's just. It's very murky when we start trying to go, well, you know, Donald Trump Jr. is guilty of something, and that's what President Trump's trying to do. I don't see that Donald – there's not been any evidence that I've seen produced that says that Donald Trump Jr. is guilty of anything. Now, Christian Post today is reporting that one of the new things that we discovered in May, or something that was interesting in May, they've got a list – today, if you want to go to Christian Post and read it, it's pretty interesting. We had a Russian, one of the new things that came out in May that we found out, that the New York Times and CNN reported that 11 days before Trump's presidential inauguration in January 2017, his attorney, Michael Cohen, met with a Russian official who's linked to the Kremlin. He's one of these oligarchs, one of these wealthy guys who has ties to the Kremlin. And according to Columbus Nova CEO Andrew Enrader, who was involved in the meeting, the two discussed how to strengthen U.S.-Russia relations under the Trump administration. And it was a very short meeting. And they didn't know that this guy was coming to the meeting when the meeting was held. Let's see what they said about that. Obviously, if I'd known in January 2017 I was about to hire a high-profile guy who'd wind up in a big mess, I wouldn't have introduced him to my biggest client and wouldn't have hired him at all, Iterator was quoted as saying. He's talking about the fact that he didn't know that this Viktor Vexberg was the Russian billionaire, the oligarch, was coming to the meeting. Well, okay, if that's it, this is about Michael Cohen. This is not about Donald Trump Jr. And if that's the biggest thing that they can say, I mean, what is the harm in having a brief conversation about strengthening U.S.-Russian relations? That kind of stuff goes on all the time during transitional governments. This is the thing that the left has been screaming, is that there was any contact at all during the transition. Well, I would expect there'd be a lot of contact between backdoor contacts. This was happening when Obama was transitioning into office. It was happening when Hillary Clinton was named as Secretary of State. I mean, as soon as that information gets out there, the tentacles of the government begin to spread out to see what kind of dialogue we can have. That's no evidence whatsoever that there was collusion or some kind of deal in the works.
Mm-hmm. No, you're exactly right, because anytime you're about to take on a new job, well, what do? You have job training. You go in, you start looking at things. What are the material that I'm going to be working with? Who are the people that I'm going to be working with? What are the job objectives, et cetera, et cetera? And so when there's a transition of leadership like that, that's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
They want to say, okay, let's start setting the groundwork so that on day one we're not trying to set the groundwork. You know, we want to get that done ahead of time, so on day one we can hit the ground running and we can start to work.
Yeah. Well, and then here's the other thing. This is out of the five. I only want to mention two briefly that Christian Post talks about. The other is, of course, the testimony transcripts of Donald Trump Jr.'s testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee got released. Now, he testified back in September, and they've just now released the transcripts. Well, the only thing Donald Trump Jr. so far that we can see that he might be called into question over is this meeting that he had with Natalia Veselnitskaya. I'm doing the best I can here with Russian names. Okay. So, and of course, there were other people in that meeting that had Russian ties. Donald Trump Jr. initially said that that meeting was about Russian adoptions. But there's an email that surfaced that basically says that the meeting was going to be about getting dirt on the Hillary campaign. But here's the thing. None of that happened. I mean, yeah, maybe he went to that meeting thinking that he was going to hear something about Hillary Clinton. But if he went to the meeting and no information was exchanged, nothing was given to Donald Trump Jr., Donald Trump Jr. was not an official member of the transition team. He didn't have to report the meeting under law. I don't see whether that's going to get him into enough trouble that President Trump would be trying to protect him. I just don't see if Mueller might have information that we don't have. Certainly he does. But so far, it's going to have to be a lot more than anything we've seen in order for the Trump administration or anybody associated with it to be in any kind of trouble. Is what it looks like to me. Let's take a break and we'll come back. 1-888-660-WLFJ, 888-660-9535. Stay with us.
Here are your hosts, Hannah Miller and Dr. Tony Bean.
I'm going to ask you a question I know you don't know the answer to.
Okay. All right, this sounds like an awesome game.
Yeah, it does sound like it's going to be a lot of fun here. Do you have any, I mean, just speculate with me for a minute. Why are so many people giddy over the fact that Solo, a Star Wars movie, is not doing well? I can't get my mind wrapped around. Every time I'm going through news stories, and I mean, Star Wars movie dying at the box office. And it's almost you can hear, you know, people in the background, ha, we've got them now. What is it about? Is Darth Vader running the movie industry now? So, you know, any kind of undercutting of Han Solo is a good thing. I mean, I just can't figure it out. Listen to this. This is cut number three. I wasn't going to do this, but let's listen. This is the box office report, okay, from the weekend. Now, mind you, well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to play it, and then you tell me what movie's number one over the weekend. Here we go.
You look good. A little rough around the edges, but good.
Holding first place Solo, a Star Wars story, and that's getting by.
Sorry I'm late. I was rounding up all the gluten in the world and launching into space where it can't not hurt us ever again.
Kiss me like you miss me, Red.
Deadpool, which stayed strong at the number two position for a three-week total of $255 million in North America. The new number three box office holder.
How would you like to sail the Hazard into California first?
What do you think?
I think 1,000 miles is insane.
I'm not going anywhere without you.
Adrift with Shailene Woodley and Sam Claflin. Rounding out the top five films, Avengers Infinity War and Book Club. Mike Piazza, Fox News.
Okay, all right, look, they mentioned, right, at the beginning that Han or Solo was number one. So, but just barely. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was kind of like, okay, Solo's number one, but the Deadpool and all these other movies are out there. There's so much, but it's almost like they're so much better. What are you going to see this stupid Solo movie when it's doing so bad? I just don't get the vitriol against this movie that's out there. It's made, you know. It was still number one at the box office. Now, it was down something like 27% from its opening, and it's not going to, you know, they say it's not going to make the mark worldwide and all this kind of, I get that, but do we have to just keep pounding? It's almost like people are looking for a story in entertainment to get after, and the fact that a Star Wars movie is not doing that well is something that they want to pound against, and I just don't get it. Okay.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. I get, well, people, maybe I'm the only person about that cares about this, but I just,
probably.
It's a good, maybe so, but it's a good movie. I mean, I went to see the movie. It's not a, I mean, nobody's going to run to the Oscars and say that there ought to be five or six handed out And this is his best picture of the year. But, I mean, in terms of an action, adventure, science fiction movie, I mean, this is what my wife said, who's not, I mean, the last person that would ever be a science fiction fan is my wife. Mm-hmm. She just doesn't. The whole thing she didn't get. But she was like, I stayed awake for this. It's a really pretty good story.
Yeah.
Now, coming from Denise, to me, that means that this movie ought to be doing better. So mm-hmm. I don't get why.
It doesn't matter. The Incredibles 2 is coming out on Friday.
That'll
That's
be
right.
the end, right?
Yeah.
It's gonna blow everybody. Okay, so are you an Incredibles?
Oh, man. We've been waiting how many years for this?
Good grief.
It's like several. It's been almost 2 decades, I think.
I've never seen an Incredibles movie.
Yeah, well, there's only one. So, but right. that's the thing. They set it up for a second. How was it 14 years ago when it had come out? Something about that. And then there's not been anything. There's been
was
no follow-up.
Was it big?
Yeah,
really big,
it was
like
big.
Big.
It was
hit.
Great. Was it was
big?
A fantastic okay. hit. And
Kids
my
love
generation
it.
Loved it.
Okay, who and is this? Who puts this out? Is this a...
It's a Pixar.
Pixar
yeah.
thing. Okay,
yeah.
so it's like Toy Story.
Right.
Except... Didn't Disney like take over Toy Story? They must have because they're having a big, they're doing a big thing, Toy Story exhibit at Disney World.
I think they bought out Pixar.
Did they? Okay, because they're gonna, you know, Disney owns Star Wars now, so they've got, you know, when we were there back in October, they were building this. You can't see it because they've got these high fences all the way around it.
Right.
But there's a whole section that's gonna be Star Wars. So, you know,
well,
I gotta
Charlie
go back
Charlie
to
on Facebook said he thoroughly enjoyed Solo and that the negative press is killing it, not the individual reviews.
Well, see, that,
so he's in agreement
that's
with
me.
You.
I just think because everybody's coming out and saying, well, it's tanking at the box office. Nobody's saying that it's not a good movie. They're just saying, well, it's not making a gazillion dollars. So something must be wrong. We've got to go fix it. There's a lot of references to back to the original Star Wars story. I mean, there are moments in there that you just got to go. I mean, this is how Han Solo and Chewbacca got together.
Yeah,
that's big. At least it is to
well,
me.
Well, Charlie said right. Incredibles 2. Yes! So he's obviously excited about that as well.
Well, haven't
I
seen
agree,
Incredibles
Charlie.
1. I guess
you need to go see it. It's a funny one. It's a good one.
I'll put that on my list with
that one in Megamind.
It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
You know, I'll go see those sometime before my wonderful life is over, maybe. All right. We'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Everett's electables because we got a Republican primary coming up. And we always talk about Everett's electables. We'll tell you what Everett says and why it matters when we return. Stay with us.
And here's your hosts, Hannah Miller and Dr. Tony Bean.
All right. This is Tony Bean.
This is Hannah Miller.
And we're going to wrap up today talking about Everett's electables. Now, let me – Everett Headley – is a friend of mine, but he's also somebody who's been involved in South Carolina politics for a long time. He and one of the things that he does, I think, better than anybody, is publish this report before an election every year where he does in-depth background into the voting records of candidates who have been serving in office. And, you know, and he states at the beginning of this thing, he says, look, for candidates already in office, I've been able to check their voting records. My comments reflect their voting records over the course of their tenure. For those who have never run for office before and who claim a position, I will state their claim, but understand that I have nothing by which to verify the claim. I like
where
that.
Where can people get this, by the
well,
way?
Well, I don't – can we publish – can we put this up on the website? I mean, it can we? Because it's just his opinion about. So, I mean, you know.
I think in the email he sent, he said you could.
He gives us permission. So let's put it. Why don't we put it on our website?
Okay.
Do you know how to do that?
Yeah,
I'll,
I do. Can you email it to me?
I'll forward you the email. Yeah, that has the link.
Well,
I'm
a
millennial.
I can do that
of
too.
Course, I know how to do it. No,
oh,
I'm just
pardon me, super millennial.
No,
super
that's what
M.
people of older generations just assume is that millennials know how to do all this stuff.
Well,
but I do. I have posted a few times.
You've told me how to do it, but I just don't go there.
It's been a while.
A doctorate program, okay?
I'm not antagonizing you.
I know.
I'm poking fun really at my own generation.
Taking three classes this summer, which is nuts. All right. In the 4th Congressional District, Josh Kimbrell, he talks about all the candidates. He basically says that his wife has already voted for Josh Kimbrell. and just all the cards on the table, Everett is going to vote for Stephen Brown because Everett and Stephen Brown, they've been personal friends, but that he would be perfectly happy with Josh Kimbrell. So you could tell that he kind of had a tussle about this in his own mind. But for the 4th Congressional District, He goes on to say that what it looks like right now is you've got Lee Bright, who, according to polling data, is on top, and then there's about a 3- or 4-way tie for second place to get into a runoff. Mm-hmm. All right, Everett's on the phone. Everett, thanks for calling.
Oh, awesome.
Hey, good morning, y'all.
Hey, good morning.
I'm actually going to be posting on Facebook, hopefully later this afternoon.
Okay, good.
There was a poll that actually came out on the governor's race, so I had to do a couple of edits. Facebook's a wonderful thing you can make edits. You can't do that with paper.
Yeah.
So, right. Well, tell us about the governor's race. What does the poll say?
The poll, it was in the state newspaper. It came out last night. State newspaper has Henry McMaster at 37, has Templeton at 25, John Warren at 20%, Kevin Bryan at 5%, and I think McGill was at 3%. I don't know what they didn't state what the undecideds were, but do the math and figure out, you know, where the undecideds were. So
yeah.
But you know, looking at that numbers, the second place race is real close between Warren and Templeton. So that's going to be interesting. To
yeah, because you got what, about 5% separating those two?
Yeah, 5% separating the two, and he was at 1% the last time they did it. And I think Templeton was at 21, so she's increased a little bit. Or 21 or 24, I don't remember which. Sorry, I'm doing it off memory in the car. So
Warren has you'd have to say that he has surged as of late. And that's not a bad position to be in going up to the primary, because he could, if he's got momentum, he could overtake Templeton and end up being in the runoff. You think there's any way that anybody other than McMaster comes out on top in this? I mean, in terms of the primary.
Well, he dropped from the initial poll that this company did, and, you know, each paper probably organizes, you know, a poll with a particular group, so each one might be a little bit different, but this one was done by the state newspaper, or at least the one reported by the state newspaper. I don't know. They named the name of the company that did it, Target something, that did the poll.
Right.
But the last time they did it, they had him at 45%, so he dropped a good bit.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If that keeps going, now, I mean, again, we only have 10 days, or thereabouts anyway, 8 days, I guess, now. There's not a lot of time, you know, for the poll numbers to move a lot, but, you know, I think it's him, and I think he's in a runoff unless he does something extremely embarrassing
he'll
put
be
his
in
foot in mouth, which he always has the ability to do. So
yeah, he'll be in the runoff. I don't think, but it's going to be interesting to see who's going to be in it with him. Now, you've actually, I think for governor, you came out, you said you're going to vote for Kevin Bryant, but mm-hmm. it's because of his voting record that you've got a lot of evidence that he's a conservative.
And understand, I made a commitment to him early, before John Warren even got in the race. So, you know, I'm going to stick by that commitment. But, you know, if people are looking for someone, you know, that's on the conservative side of things, and, you know, they don't trust Templeton or whatever, you know, John Warren's the only other candidate that at this point can get there.
Yeah.
So,
now,
you know, Bryant has always been with us there on the issues. I mean, he has.
Well, he has. I mean, there's no mm-hmm. – I'm not sure – I really can't wrap my mind around why his campaign has not caught fire, because I really thought that he was going to be the main challenger. And he just
–
for whatever mm-hmm. reason, it just hasn't. And that's been one of the interesting things about this race to me. But mm-hmm. right now, John Warren is the man who's surging in the polls, no question. And mm-hmm. and McMaster obviously is losing some ground. All right, in the 4th district, now you talked about you're going to vote for Stephen Brown, and your wife's already voted for Josh Kimbrell. So you've got Lee Bright. You're saying the latest polling data still has Lee on top, and then a 3-way tie for second?
Pretty much. That's what I'm hearing. You know, the polling numbers are changing, obviously, daily, because people are, you know, they're spending – the candidates are spending money on advertising. They're having mail pieces go out. They're doing the door-to-door. There's a lot of stuff going on, so it's a lot of moving parts.
Right.
And there's a lot of undecideds. I mean, mm-hmm. almost every single poll that I've been told about, it's interesting because each candidate you talk to, they're in second. You know, mm-hmm. which is kind of funny. But the undecideds are 25 to 30%. I mean, the undecideds could swing the election. It
oh, yeah.
depends on where
Easily.
They're going to go.
Yeah. Well, it depends on whether they show up or not, if they're actually going to show up to the polls. All right, we're down to about 30 seconds, Everett. Listen, thanks for calling in. So you're going to put this up on Facebook. It'll be on your Facebook page.
I'm going to put it on Facebook, page. And I made an edit, a couple edits, so I'll send you a new copy. So.
All right, sounds good. I appreciate it.
All right.
Well, hope you enjoyed the show today. It's been fun.
Yeah, it's been a good one.
We'll have to try to remember everything we've done because I noticed you weren't note-taking over there.
The podcast.
We can do it. We can do it, ladies and gentlemen.
We did it Thursday.
We are the Incredibles of radio. See you in the morning.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or iHeartMedia.